Look up there in the sky. It's a bird, a plane. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Those boys are so handsome.
One writer,
one artist,
one weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric C. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. How are you doing, Eric, on this fine Sunday afternoon?
It was about to be much, much less this time, wasn't it?
Well, you know, a little bit less.
A little bit less.
A little bit. Not much, much less, but some less.
Something less.
Well, I don't know how much less it would have been after I read that comic book.
We'll talk about that.
Yes.
What do you got for us?
Oh, Handsomeites, you're here too, aren't you? Hey, how's it going?
Hey.
That's how this works. Yeah, it is. We got a great show for you. We are discussing Hush by Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee in Nerdboy Book Club this week. We're going to talk video games and checking in. And we have some comic books to discuss as well.
Some of them we even remembered to read.
Some of them we remembered. And maybe one of them we just realized neither of us read right before we started recording.
Coincidentally.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, we're both rereads. It's okay.
Yes. That's how we get through it. Mm-hmm. What's that relationship called when the two people help each other? I want to say codependent, but that's a bad thing. I think that's a bad thing.
I think you're not quite describing codependency, but whatever it is, it sounds like we're just silly with it.
We are. But, I think that's enough dicking around. I mean, there's always room for more
Are you sure that the terminology is symbiotic?
Maybe that's it. That's probably the word. That's a good word. I have some symbiosis to talk about in the comic books, actually.
Uh-oh.
But, yeah. With that, time for weekly floppies!
I was looking at my watch. It is indeed floppy time.
Ooh, yeah.
Says right there.
You look right closely on your watch, on your phone, on your clock. It will say, it's in fine print, very small, but there's a little mark on there that says floppy time.
Mm-hmm.
Eric and I, we're tuned to it, so we know. More symbiosis.
Yes.
But weekly floppies is the part of the show. Eric and I talk about the week's books, if we remember to read them, and tell you to buy or do not buy them. We are starting off with DC this week in Wonder Woman number 36. New creative team on this. Azzarello and Cliff Chang, their acclaimed run has ended, and now we have a husband and wife duo.
Mm-hmm. Pair of Finches.
We have Meredith Finch as the writer, and pencils by David Finch, inks by Richard Friend. You can always lean on him because he's your friend. Colors by Sonia Oback, letters by Sal Cipriano. What do you think, Eric? Did you read any of Azzarello's run?
I'm familiar with his work, but not extensively. I don't think, we did read at least one Wonder Woman book for the podcast.
Yeah, I think
and I've not
one,
read too many others.
No, I've read the first trade, and it's like one of those things where I think it's qualitatively good, but I don't think I liked it enough to keep reading it. But everyone, it's critically and commercially it was very successful, so I'm not gonna criticize it, but this is, I don't know, there was a little bit of controversy before this book even started because of David Finch's comments about Wonder Woman.
Can you enlighten me? I don't know what those are.
It was really a lot of bluster. This is David Finch's original comments when asked about it. Really, from where I come from, and we've talked about this a lot, we want to make sure it's a book that treats her as a human being first and foremost, but is also respectful of the fact she represents something more. We want her to be a strong, I don't want to say feminist, but a strong character, beautiful but strong. Then people were upset that he just wouldn't call her a feminist.
What a dumb reason to be upset.
Yeah, I know, yeah, it's comic books, so people
right.
just go crazy well, over the dumb little comments.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you say. That's such a shitty little petty thing to be upset about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this guy is obviously on your team, and you're going to criticize him for not being exactly perfect. That frustrates me. This is that.
Regardless of his comments, what do you think about this comic book?
It's nice looking. It's not terribly done. It feels like nothing happens in it. It feels like a bunch of people standing around posing for 22 pages, and then the book ends.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of like waiting
mm-hmm.
for things to happen. Like,
mm-hmm.
just, you know, there of anything of actual substance, you know, I mean, we see that there's problems in Paradise Island, in the Amazons. They don't want men in their environment. Then Wonder Woman fights Swamp Thing.
For no reason. Other than she's crazy, apparently. Oh, those crazy ladies.
Yes, she's very upset at Swamp Thing. She has her and Aquaman. Aqua Steel Gaze Aquaman is they have a little heart to heart. And then
Blue Steel.
Blue Steel, then we get like a last page reveal. Which just coming into this issue, like, if this is a jumping on point,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't have much of an impact.
No.
Because there's no connection.
I mean, it's not bad. I mean, you understand the relationship just
yes.
because, you know, you understand that. But I mean, there is no real emotional connection with that. The rest of the stuff in this book felt more intriguing and interesting, but it's still, it doesn't quite work. I don't dislike it. I enjoy the art, and it doesn't feel, it's not an awful book. And I feel like that's really the highest criticism I can give of it is it's not, or the highest praise I can give it is the not an awful book. And yeah. It looks very nice.
No, I've been a fan of, there's David Finch has his critics, but I've always liked his art and he's done a good job on this book, but I agree with you. It's just kind of so like not a very necessarily gripping. It's just like 3 pages of actual substance in a 20 page comic book.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a mediocre, not bad, but not really. I would not good enough to recommend. So,
right.
I'm a do not buy.
I don't think there's any reason to go out of your way to buy it, but I think this team could go somewhere. I'd like to see them do more. I mean, you said this is the first.
Yes.
From a new team.
Right.
I'm not so overwhelmingly negative, and I want to like this book. So I'm actually kind of a soft buy on it.
Okay.
Despite my criticism, so.
Perspective. It's a perspective
yeah.
buy.
I want to see, more, and I want this to be good. This has the earmarks of a lot of things that I like. I just feel like they're moving too slow. They're trying to figure things out. It might take, you know, they might need to be 6 or 8 issues in to their run before they really figure things out.
Yeah, we'll check back in at a later date and see how it's going. That was a split decision, for the record, on
yep.
Wonder Woman 36.
Totally.
Next up is the comic book that both I and Eric forgot to read, or I just completely forgot. I did not buy it. I just didn't read it. I did just realize that right before we were about to record. Eric.
Yeah, I bought the wrong book. And I don't know how it happened.
Yeah.
We can talk about that one briefly as well, because why not?
Yes, might as well.
But, sure.
Yes, but the book that we did read it together.
Yes.
Basically.
We held hands and sat under a tree.
And read, Justice League number 36.
Yes.
What is the secret? Do it, Eric. You do it better than I do.
You know, I was born to say, what is the secret of the Amazo virus?
Yeah. And that's on the front cover.
The Amazo virus.
Amazo virus.
The Amazo virus.
Does that just riddle your body with fear? Aren't you so scared of catching? Okay. Written by Jeff Johns, art by Jason Fabok, colors Brad Anderson, Carlos M. Mangual on letters. Yes, we saw the virus. Last Justice League cover was bullshit.
That is, that's on the record. Cover's but bullshit.
This one, the Metropolis is infected, quarantined, mm-hmm. With the Amazo virus, which, yes, does first it gets you sick, then it gives you powers, and then it kills you.
Just that's the way the flu is, right?
Yep, just the way the flu works. You mm-hmm. get gravity powers, and then you die.
Well, I'm like this guy whose face shoots fire when I'm sick.
his entire face.
His whole face shoots a fireball.
It does.
His whole face. I love that.
I know. It's like he's a flashlight.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel when I'm sick. I feel like I'm glowing like a flashlight. Yeah.
I don't know. This comic is ridiculous.
Honestly, I have read worse Jeff Johns comics.
There are worse. I'm not saying it's bad.
No, I kind of feel like the bar is getting really set low for DC. And in my eyes, that it's like, oh, come on, buddy. You can do it. You can do it, guy. Come on.
Just keep trying.
Like it's a 6-year-old with Down syndrome, and I'm like, oh, buddy, you could do it. Don't let those bullies get you down. Yeah, I don't know. I want to like this. There's some aspects of it that are compelling.
Yeah, there are.
It's not terrible.
No, I mean I enjoy the art.
The art is really, really nice. I actually like the way all the characters are drawn in this. Like I was okay on the Finch art in the last book for most of the characters. I really liked the Wonder Woman. I actually like all the characters in this, the way they're handled, better. Even the Wonder Woman. Mostly, I think it's just because I think he makes her costume look really cool.
Yes, it does look really nice, that one, mm-hmm. the one shot.
She's got, like, that sort of armored skirt on. It looks really rad.
I just... Why does Batman have a hazmat symbol on? He has a bat suit with a hazmat, like a...
Batman...
Biohazard?
Well, as you know, Batman has to have a bat-flavored everything.
I know.
I just don't see the
need. Why would Bruce Wayne actually go, well, let's say there's a virus. Everyone knows I'm Batman.
Yep.
They need to make sure, they need to know it's even more serious. I need to have a biohazard suit on.
He calls his ropes bat ropes.
I know. I think I'm getting to a point where I keep bringing this up where Batman is just this concept. But isn't Shazam have the powers of gods? Shouldn't he be immune too? He's not.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
He's not his human form now. He's in Shazam form.
Yeah, he should be able to magic it away.
Yeah.
And Cyborg's a fucking robot.
He's only a little bit human.
Yeah.
I don't know. We're getting a lot of caveats here, I guess, with their abilities.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. I hesitate to say bye because there's a lot of just really clunky.
There are problems with it. I have wanted a not terrible DC / Justice League book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how long have we been picking up books like this? This is probably the best one that we have in like 2 years. 2 years of reading and reviewing comic books. This is it. This is the pinnacle. The last one, bullshit, apparently.
No, the cover. The actual comic itself wasn't.
Well, even
terrible.
It wasn't. I mean, I guess it was okay. You know? It was a lot of weird, like, posturing between Luthor and Batman. I don't know. This is...
I just want to read this.
Go right ahead.
This is Luthor narrating about how the virus came to be. I isolated an artificial enzyme within the android and copied it genetically, creating a virus to act as a patch on a metahuman's DNA. The amazovirus was designed to suppress a metahuman's abilities, specifically those with violent criminal records. But the virus proved too controversial and untested when I presented it to the White House, so I shelved it and locked it away. What?
Well, you just need to say sciencey words, and people are supposed to turn their brain off.
Couldn't you just say that works. I created a virus based on Amazo's abilities. It was supposed to hurt superhumans, but the government didn't want me to use it.
I said that
in a third of the words he used, and it made more sense.
Mm.
No?
Go build yourself a green suit, and then it'll be okay.
Yes. And Wonder Woman's, like, the first words when we see her, how long do my friends have before they die?
She's down to business. It's okay.
No, I just don't. It just, I don't know. It feels clunky to me.
Mm.
I don't know.
Are
you a buy, Eric? Are you a buy?
That's a complicated question. I mean, I'm not in any way excited about this. If you're dying for a Justice League book that's not terrible, this is a good one to buy. I am actually intrigued on where it's going, so I guess I'm leaning more buy than not. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to be excited about this. So that's my caveat.
Yeah, I don't... Having just spent the money on this and read it,
you kind of want your $4 back.
Yeah, it did not improve my week.
Yes, I agree. I do enjoy Wonder Woman and her metal skirt, but that has enhanced my day. The rest of it, not so much.
Yeah, not so much. I'm a do not buy on this, despite it being not terrible, but it's better on the Justice League scale.
Yeah.
It's a solid B, but on a normal comic book scale, it's like a C-. Do not buy.
I see eye to eye with that. I'm going to go ahead and fall in the line of a very unenthusiastic buy, so we'll split this decision as well.
Okay, good. We're forming a line of I can't think of words today.
Words are complicated.
Yes, DC books. We agree on them the same way both times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're basically saying the same thing, just sort of one of us is a buy, the other one's not.
You're more optimistic about it.
I am. I really am.
Next up is our indie book of the week, is Intersect, number 1, by Ray Fox. Written, drawn, all of it. This is a weird book.
I think that is putting it nicely.
It is. That's the nice way of saying this book is weird.
Do you know what I will say about this book?
It's... Let me think. Let me think. Listeners, I want you to get your shot glasses out. Pour your liquor of choice.
Well, I don't, the word that you're about to say, I'm not even going to say it because I think it goes, it absolutely goes without saying.
Does it?
Absolutely. It, all
Eric,
yes,
I'm going to let you, you know, you should say it. You say it because it's your word.
Do I have to say this book is pretentious?
It is pretentious.
This,
I agree with you.
They have this, they have a picture of this book beside the definition of pretentious in the dictionary. This is sophomoric art school nonsense. This book is terrible. This is exactly the kind of thing like an illustration student who, I don't know. This is a bad illustration project. Illustration like 101 project. It looks bad. It doesn't tell the story. It's confusing as hell. This is the way Neil Gaiman wrote a book once things were established. Once the scene's set, once you understand what's going on, then you sort of float around and do weird storytelling like this. You do not start out the gate like this. This is a mess. You have no idea. I have no more information on the back side of this book than I did on the front side.
I
know less about what this book is about after having read it. It is an informational black hole. Nothing comes out.
I did glean a little of information.
I do not like this book from this. That is what I've walked away with.
A very, very basic plot summary, because that is the most I could provide, and even that is tenuous, is that there is
it's some kind of creature that has like several different people or personalities and like bodies inside it.
Yes, it moves back and forth, adding and moving parts, and then they have some guy with them, and they're running from some monster named Lucky that was a dog? Question mark.
Nothing, no.
I don't know.
It doesn't,
I mean, it's
it doesn't
named Lucky
matter.
And it howls, I assume. I don't know. And then there's a collection of weird poetry and, like, graphic mm-hmm. arts. Graphic
there's,
art
like,
stuff
there's
the
like
end.
7 or 8 pages of this.
Yeah.
This guy really thinks an awful lot of himself.
Well, Image... let him do it, I guess. I mean, I think this is mainly policy.
This book is the strongest argument for comic book editors I've ever seen.
I've seen some glowing reviews of this online.
By who? Ray Fox's mom?
No, I think it was a CBR or Comics Alliance. I follow them on my Facebook, so I saw a review, and they're like, "This is for people who really want to." I'm like, "Okay." It seemed positive. There's not enough information told. The storytelling is, I understand what they're trying to do, he's trying to do. There's one person who did this.
Yes.
I don't want to say they when it's one person. But it doesn't tell you, and it doesn't give you a reason to keep reading. Which is the most important thing about a first issue. I mean, if you're going to try and do something like this, serialized format is not the way to do it.
Mm-mm.
To release this as just a quote unquote graphic novel would be the way to do it. If you're going to do like an arty,
yeah,
weird storytelling thing, not one issue where you have no clue what's happening. You don't even, you barely know the characters' names. I don't even think I can't remember them except for Lucky.
I don't.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
Okay, I have a question. I have a question for you, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
Worse, better, or worse than The Bigger Bang?
That's a really tough call. I was listening to my vitriol for The Bigger Bang, and I've softened on it a little bit. And right now, I revile this. So, in this moment, I am very frustrated with this book. I feel like you're trolling me a bit picking these books.
I'm not. I'm really not.
So the comics industry is fucking trolling me.
I I just pick whatever looks interesting. I see a new number one by published by Image Comics, written by we've read Ray Fox before and he's been competent.
Yeah.
And I was like,
it's amazing because this is like nothing we've ever read before. This is weird, bad, experimental, just horse shit. I think I appreciate the art a lot more in Intersect, excuse me, as I was just looking at Bigger Bang, which I do not enjoy the artwork. I like the sort of weird things that he's doing with the art, but it does not tell a story. And comics are a storytelling medium. I think it's really shitty to just lay all of this at the feet of your reader and be like, oh, well, you don't get it. That's just your problem. But you're just intentionally just trying to make things weird instead of good. That, I don't know. That really gets my goat. It seems like you're trying to do a functional thing. You're trying to communicate ideas with, you know, words and pictures. And this feels like an utter failure to do so.
Yeah, it's not, it doesn't say anything.
No.
This is definitely not the format for this, especially. No. I can appreciate trying strange things, but putting out 20 pages of nonsense and then expecting us to come back for more.
No, exactly. And I like your comment. And I think when I think about this in a bigger format with more that goes and explains things, I mean, I could suffer through a whole graphic novel format of this, but to cut it off at 22 pages is it's just bananas.
Yeah.
It really suffers. But I mean, I could see a larger book that just sort of meanders and does weird shit like that. I would feel better about that.
Yeah, me too.
Good call.
But this is do not buy. I don't know. If you are just want to look at weirdness in a comic book, go ahead, but I do not want to spend my money on it. So
no. Yeah. I am gonna say, you know, do not buy. You thought I was gonna say, just to contradict you, buy it.
Right? I'm actually thinking about it. I'm a soft buy.
You know,
it's like a solid B plus.
Yeah, no,
apparently that's my voice for you.
I don't really sound like that.
No, you don't.
Even when I'm kind of doing it back, I don't really sound like that.
Not really. No.
Not really.
That's our I guess, slightly more positive Eeyore. I guess that's what that is.
Positive Eeyore. That's
positive
good.
Eeyore, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Mom, thanks for noticing me.
Hey, it's a nice day outside.
It is.
It's a little windy. I like it.
Oh. I get to go look for my tail.
Oh, Lord. Intersect has driven us insane.
It has.
Moving on to Marvel, Avengers, number 38. Dear Lord, the cast page for this comic.
Yeah, tell me about it.
We get, let's see, three different versions of Avengers, plus Illuminati, plus the Cabal, plus just Cyclops hanging out on the bottom. Poor old little Cyclops.
Yep.
Written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Stefano Caselli, colors by Frank Martin, letters by Corey Pettit. Those keeping track at home, 6 months, time runs out. The end of the last issue, we saw Thor and Hyperion jump into some portal to travel across the multiverse, never to return. This gives you a little bit more background about what's happening. A little. It makes it a little bit more clear about what's happening. And what has happened, I suppose, in that time period.
It's a little bit more clear.
Yeah, it's not. Still, there's an inherent questions just because that's the nature of this.
Yeah,
of this event. Mm-hmm. Is what's, you have to have questions because it's what's driving everything. What has happened? We do get a Miranda shot.
Oh man, did I miss it?
Page 17.
Oh, I probably looked right at it.
Probably did.
Yeah, that is absolutely.
With Stefano Caselli, not Lanil Francis here, but still.
Yeah, it's not the thunderous booty that I associate with that.
No, it's, I guess that's fair. But, I like this comic. I certainly enjoy Stefano Caselli's art.
Mm, no, absolutely.
I like that it does reveal a little bit about what's happening.
Yeah.
I am intrigued by the reveal at the end, even though it just raises more questions.
It means nothing to me. I have no idea why that's a reveal.
Yeah, it's, you know.
That's sort of my issue with a lot of this is I feel like I'm struggling to keep up with everything, every aspect of this. There's this shit whizzing past my head, left and right. I'm like, who's that guy? What's going on here? I mean, I still enjoy it. But, I mean, I think it's just Hickman's style of writing, possibly, mm-hmm. and the fact that I am not as clear as to who all these characters are and what parts of the story are relevant. I mean, I'm still able to take enough that I enjoy this book, but it's a lot.
It is a lot. I think a lot of it I just hand wave away. I'm like,
yes.
Like all those, you know, Star Brand and Night Mask and all those, you know, space heroes that Hickman has kind of brought into the picture or,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever, Smasher as well. You just kind of go, yes, they are special. They're important. What's not, I can't think about it too much. You know, I enjoy this story he's telling. It probably would help if you had read 30 issues of Avengers, but I haven't. I haven't either, and I still enjoy it enough to recommend it.
I'm intrigued enough that it's a fun read. I wish I could understand what in the hell it was about.
I don't know. Again, this is like, it's like the, I did not read Access this week. I broke it. I broke off that habit.
You finally quit him.
I finally quit him.
Good for you, girlfriend.
It's just, I don't know how much of it is that this is like a Marvel Universe, like big event thing that I'm enjoying reading. It doesn't hurt to read it. I like the people in it. They're intriguing and it raises interesting questions about them. As opposed to Axis, which just makes me hurt. And I've liked Caselli's art for a long time, and this certainly does not change my mind. So, bye.
Yeah, go ahead and bye. So I have a system query for you, Robbie.
Uh-oh. System query?
Mm-hmm. Do you like kitty cats?
Do I have to give the actual response, or?
Well, that's what that was a reference to, yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, I need to find it, then.
It's like on the first page. Page one.
I like kitty cats.
User status, I like kitty cats.
User status, I like kitty cats. I think that probably has been my Facebook status at one point or the other.
It would not surprise me.
Yeah. I'm not going to say that did not have a little bit of to do with me liking this book.
Mm, that was the save the cat moment.
Even though it's not a cat.
It's not. It's a flirkin.
That's not a flirkin either.
You don't know that.
I do know that. Flirkins look differently.
Are you a flirkin biologist?
I'm a flirkin expert on flirkins.
There you go. Flirkin expert.
That's a double buy on Avengers 38. Next up, New Avengers, number 26. We're doubling up Avengers books this week. The cast page on this one, a little bit more handleable, I guess I should. It's a little bit more easy.
Mm, so this is manageable.
You only have 9 people.
Mm-hmm.
Or 10. 10 and not 40.
Yes.
This is also written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Kev Walker, ink assist by Scott Hanna. I'm not sure the extent of that, but color by Frank Martin and Dono Sanchez Almara, letters Joe Caramagna. most of this issue is concerned with Doom and Valeria and Tony Stark. And Black Swan, to a certain extent.
Chatting it up with Tony.
And we had previously, I was actually listening to an old episode where we picked on Mr. Walker a lot, because that the art in that one was, you remember that one New Avengers book?
This is the same guy.
Yep.
I can hardly believe it. He really must have been under the gun. And I'm not going to say that this is like amazing, like, you know, beyond top tier work, but it's a solid book and I enjoy the art. There are several pages where I'm like, oh, I like the way that looks. I like the way that looks. That book was the worst.
Yeah, this is, it is hard. Like, it substantially looks substantially better.
Mm-hmm.
I read this before I read Avengers.
I did as well.
And I don't know if that colors my thoughts on Avengers as well, because they are connected. Mm-hmm. But seeing Tony Stark as like this broken man who still has his pride, who refuses to give it up.
Yeah.
I don't know if that influenced me to like Avengers more, but seeing this is Doom being Doom, thinking that he can, he's being told to his face that he cannot win, and he says, well, I'm going to win anyway. And Tony Stark refusing to even, like, how's he eating? Does he need food anymore? Does the Black Swan bring him food?
Maybe. You don't know.
I don't know. But this intrigues me. I like this book. This is, of all books we read, this is by far my favorite.
By far?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, I am a buy.
I'm a buy, but I'm not as wild about it as you are. It's good. It's passable. I don't know. I enjoy it. I mean, I enjoy what he's doing with this, but it's, these are not bite-sized enough for me.
No, it's extremely continuity heavy.
Mm-hmm. I think at a certain point, maybe, you know, years down the line, we'll have to review all of this event and figure out exactly what the hell's going on, because it's just so complicated and shit's shifting around so much. So you could write a graduate thesis on this shit.
Well, that's, you didn't read Superior Iron Man last week.
Yeah, this is,
and this is
a lot
this
of
is
that.
After, well, this is after all that is. This is, you know, this is the future, theoretically, in the Marvel continuity. This is
when his suit gets a lot dorkier.
Yeah, well, that happened in the first issue.
Yeah.
Of Superior Iron Man, and I complained about that issue and said, you know, it wasn't that good. It was, you know, Tony Stark was kind of dumb. Like, if you want to make a Tony Stark that is, you know, a villain, this is the way to do it. This is what makes him an interesting character. Not he's releasing an improvement app that you have to pay on your phone for.
Yeah.
That makes him like Farmville or something. That is not like, this is make him his, this is what I'm looking for, not that. And that's why I like it so much, is that because it means, like, Tony Stark being quote unquote bad guy, but it means something. I guess. I don't know.
I like that perspective, but it's still, I don't know. There's a lot of pieces to this that I am missing.
All you have to do, Eric, okay? Your homework, homework assignment for Thanksgiving. Read 30 or so issues of Avengers.
And then put $10,000 in Jonathan Hickman's pocket.
Not 10,000? You can probably get, most of them are, I would say just buy Marvel Unlimited, you can get most of them for $10. You buy a subscription to that, 10 bucks, you probably get up to like 20 or like 25.
Mm-hmm.
Or 30. I mean, they're not that far behind. So, And then you've read it most of the recent ones, so I might do that, honestly.
Yeah, we might should make a project out of it.
But I'm all right. You're a buy. You're not as enthusiastic.
I am not overly enthusiastic, but it's enjoyable, and I like Hickman. I like this event. It's a mess. I want to know what the fuck's going on.
So double buy. New Avengers number 26. Now, Eric, how was Justice League Canada?
Yeah,
or Justice League United, or.
I accidentally read Justice League Canada, a.k.a. Justice League United, number 6. So I apparently saw the words Justice League and the number 6 instead of Justice League 36. I have really the perfect way to describe this, and you'll have to go on a little journey with me.
Okay.
One of the people I follow, I do not remember whom, so this is not going to be a really amazing story. But they tweeted a panel saying, what's the difference between comics and graphic novels? And the answer was, one of them is spaghetti, sometimes SpaghettiOs, and the other is pasta. So I really like that. I think it really explains a lot, because it says, what's the difference? Effectively nothing. But sometimes they're SpaghettiOs. Justice League United number 6 is SpaghettiOs. It is the most, I thought you had included it for us to read. And I'm like, why did you do this? This is the silliest book.
Okay. I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Is it better than Justice League 36?
Oh, definitely not.
Okay.
It's not bad, but it is the most SpaghettiO comic books I've ever seen. Like, every word bubble has a direct address comma in it.
No, I don't like that.
Yeah, every single one has a direct, and by, just to make myself clear, that means that, well, I don't know Animal Man, I don't know Stargirl, I don't know Martian Manhunter. It's like, I wonder what this person's name is. Oh, well, he just said it 3 times. Now I know. This is how we tell stories in a comic book. So, don't accidentally buy it.
I had mentioned something about Symbiosis earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I bought this week's Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
Because on the cover there is a big Agent Venom along with lots of little symbiote.
That was the whole reason we started reading
Guardians of the Galaxy, because yeah.
it had old Mr. Venom in it.
It had Flash Thompson.
Old Flash.
And he has become like he's like walking around in like a Venom hood. He looks like one of the guys from Assassin's Creed.
Sweet.
He's, I guess, stalking people in bars. He wants to go back to Earth. We get it's a very pretty book. Apparently, Kitty Pryde is now dating Star-Lord.
That's cute.
Yeah, I think a large part of why I like this book is just the Kitty Pryde cameo as a hologram. But I don't know. There's some SpaghettiO in this as well.
Is that our new term?
It might be. It's pretty good.
I think it really gets the heart of it.
There is really cool. I mean, there is a lot of just kind of fight scenes with Venom. Mm-hmm. Flash has lost control of Venom, and they take him out of the they remove the symbiote from him. But he, like, you see, like, the symbiote, like, get these weird alien changes. Like, he becomes, like, obviously something that it didn't learn from Earth. You had not seen Slither.
No.
I know I've asked you that before, and you told me. So, it reminds me of that a little bit, but at the end of the issue, I'm gonna spoil it, because I doubt it will amount to much, but the symbiote takes over Groot.
Oh. That's interesting.
But I know this is all leading to going back to Planet Venom, because that's been foretold.
Yes.
But I don't know. It got me my Venom fix and my Kitty Pryde fix a little bit without having to delve into X-books and
right.
all that. So I'd say I'm a buy on it. Just, and it's very pretty. Valeri Schiti, like, we did her, she drew those new Avengers books. These look completely different. This is, the art style is
who's the artist
different.
Again?
Schiti, Valerio Schiti.
That is a strange name.
Yeah, we, it's,
that sounds like a comic book character.
It does a little bit. I bought other comic books and yet again I did not read them.
I read another book.
What did you read?
I read The New Multiversity because it was out.
I saw it. I
know you're boycotting it.
I was tempted, Frank Quitely, but.
Yeah, well, it's Frank Quitely and Grant Morrison do The Watchmen in the Multiversity universe.
Yeah.
It's weird. I really dig it. I don't know what I'm taking away from it. I have no idea what's going on. It's very dense. It's told a lot like The Watchmen. You get Blue Beetle serving as an analog for the Night Owl. That's his name, right?
Yes.
And obviously the Question is in there as Rorschach, and he's extra Rorschach-y. He at one point they're busting a drug dealer or something, and the Question rams a whole bag of heroin down the drug dealer's face, just like stuffs it down his mouth.
Dear Lord.
And Blue Beetle's like, I can't even help this guy. I don't have any way to save him. He's like, fuck the guy. I don't care. It's really fucked up. Jesus. But it's a very interesting read. At some point, Captain Atom is the stand-in for Dr. Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting. He takes it some places. I don't know. There's a very interesting moment where he sees his old dog and he tries to find the point inside him that the sentiment is coming from and dissects him in midair. And after he does this, he's like, I just killed my dog. And he starts crying.
Jesus.
And he's like, so what is wrong with me? Why am I this thing? Please sedate me more.
My God.
It's really sad. And he just like respawns his dog. And there's a dead dog and a live dog in the panel. Jeez. It's kind of amazing. I recommend it, but you will not come away from understanding what the hell Grant Morrison's statement is.
I will buy the Multiversity collection.
I might do that as well.
I think that's where I'm at. I'm gonna buy this whenever they have the annotated Multiversity with footnotes and all that.
It needs that. This is another book that needs a friggin' graduate thesis written on it.
I think that is it for Weekly Floppies.
Yeah, we need to stop.
Stop the flop. Stop the flop. Gotta stop it until next time at least. With that, we'll move over to our next segment. That is checking in. Checking this bar show. Eric and I talk about what I've been up to during the week. Nerdy stuff. Eric, what you got?
Oh my goodness. Well, I have a couple of things that we should talk about.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel like I'm going to be a bit of a bandwagon jumper this week because everybody knows we've already talked about one of the two things. And the second thing is incredibly popular right now.
I can already know what you're going to say, but go ahead.
Yeah. The first thing is, well, okay, I'll talk about it. It is a podcast that I'm checking in with.
Okay.
So you already know what it is?
Yes. I'm fairly certain that everyone on Earth listens to, I think.
Yeah, it is a podcast called Serial that the whole world has decided to start listening to. If you are one of the few people that has not heard it, you should probably start listening to it. You'll be like me and be late to the game. There are 10 episodes out. It is very strong. It is the story of a man that is most likely gone to prison, has been convicted wrongly. A lot of questionable decisions were made, and it ended up in him being convicted entirely on basically no hard evidence and all testimony corroborated by a couple of different people, but mostly on one person who's, you know, pretty questionable. Have you listened to most of it or any of it?
No, I've been waiting.
Waiting for what?
To end.
They're already talking about season two. You should jump on it, man.
I haven't. I've subscribed to it. I just haven't listened to it.
I recommend listening to it. It hooks you really quick.
I know. I feel like I've already, like that, I'm jumping on a bandwagon when it's already the first podcast to hit 5 million downloads within a certain amount of time. Like, it's crazy.
It's a record setter, and that's,
yeah.
But I mean, this is not like the Justin Bieber cast or something.
I know. I understand it's good.
It is well crafted, and I have very few problems with it.
Let me ask you a question though.
Go right ahead.
So I know you, and I've heard things this angle taken before, but it's by people I don't really know, so I can't know if I can understand their description. But a lot of the tentativeness is like the true crime aspect of it, mm-hmm. where like I don't want to listen to too much grim. That's like I have to gear myself up to listen to Radiolab a lot of the time.
Yeah,
because a lot of time they're like, it's really good, but it's sometimes sad. And like, I'm in the middle of the day at work, I don't want to listen to something that's really sad or grim. I want to listen to something that keeps my attention, keeps me moving.
This is more that. They don't really go into too many details of the murder or anything that's your normal, like, sick and twisted, you know, true crime drama. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's not really that story. It's like a detective story, but I don't know. It's not necessarily a happy murder story, but there's only the one murder.
Right.
And there's a lot of details about it that are very confusing. And most of it just involve the lines or the lives of teenagers who are now my age.
Right.
'Cause this happened. I mean, I am this guy's age. You know, that's mm-hmm. one of the reasons that it hits home for me is it was his like senior year. He was 17 in 1999. All of that was true for me back then. And I think that's one of the reasons that this hits home for so many people is so many people that even listen to podcasts are exactly my age.
And, right.
Or, you know, your age. You're not too far off from me. And you're like, wow, I remember this year. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. It's just interesting about how, you know, people's memories have degraded and all these people remember things differently. And it's probably impossible that the truth is going to come out. And it's hard to look away. It's fascinating. Go ahead.
Did you see that there's already a podcast about the podcast?
Jesus God.
They released a podcast about Serial, the podcast.
Oh my God. That's so bad.
I heard you like some podcasts, so I put some podcasts in your podcast.
Yeah. I guess there's nothing to stop that.
Actually,
other than sense. Although, to be fair, they're probably doing pretty well with it. So whatever.
Yeah, they're not struggling.
No. As you might have noticed, as you mm-hmm. called me out in the middle of our D&D game.
Well, I call a spade a spade.
You do. You called me a goddamn shovel. I have been playing an awful lot of Shadow of Mordor, which you recommended to me, which is excellent. God, I've just kind of needed a game a little bit like this to sink my teeth into.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got people already telling me I need to get Dragon Age instead, but I'm going to see this one through and then probably pick up Dragon Age later. But
Dragon Age is like, I'm hearing like 100 hours to get even like most of it. There's probably even more than that there. I'm like,
that's kind of what I need right now.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I mean, I've barely done any of the story missions, and I'm like 18 hours.
Mm.
That's a lot for me. I'm about 18 hours into Shadow of Mordor.
Okay. None. You said you hadn't played any Assassin's Creed games before.
I have never. But my understanding of it, it looks like it's exactly the same thing.
It feels similar, yes.
Yeah. I have not even played played it in a GameStop, you know?
Yeah.
Never even seen one, but it looks like the exact same game.
The orcs.
Yeah.
You got any orc stories?
No.
Off the top of your head?
Nothing really all that interesting. It just seems like, I keep getting killed by all the special guys. The regular orcs, they don't stand a chance.
No.
They're just wussies.
Have you reached the second area yet?
Second area? No.
Like the second big map. There's a second one. Okay.
No. So far, I didn't even realize that it would go that. I didn't realize there would be a second map. I have explored the whole territory. I have killed four of the war chiefs. And so many orcs.
Yeah. That game is lots of killing orcs.
Lots of killing orcs. And I think they go out of their way to make them horrible.
Yeah.
Just so you don't feel bad about it.
No, you don't at all.
One of the games it reminds me of is, what was that game? It was like Grand Theft Auto Western.
Red Dead Redemption.
Red Dead Redemption. It reminds me of Red Dead Redemption because Red Dead Redemption was just a lot of wandering around killing bandits, but you just feel kind of gross after a while.
Well, I think that's intentional in that game.
I don't doubt that, but you're like just shooting people in the head just over and over and over again. And you just feel, ugh.
Yeah.
It's bad after a while. They go out of their way to make these orcs, excuse me. they're orcs, they're not orcs. I like that Talion was like, all like a hipster about, like, it's like, they're not orcs, son. They're orcs. Get it right. The Uruks were created by Saruman as the elite army of Sauron. Jeez. Get your Tolkien right. Ugh.
Oh, God. The Tolkien fans hate this game.
I'm not surprised.
They're like, it's changing the lore.
Well, that's the thing. They're probably the hardest group to please. We're talking about, like, they're like the neckbeards of the neckbeards. They're the neckbeard that grows on a neckbeard. That's their inception neckbeard.
Have you seen the most famous example of a hardcore
mm-hmm.
Stephen Colbert?
Yeah. Well,
he knows everything. Yes. He's read everything backwards and forwards.
Yes.
He doesn't, I doubt he plays that many video games, so I don't think he cares too much about it. But there are people. Indoor Kids had a podcast with the voice actor, not Nolan North, the other famous one. Those two guys have to do like 70% of all male voiceovers on video games, but can't think of his name. But the guy who does the voice of Talion, and Kumail Nanjiani was reading a Lancer from one of the AMAs about some guy who was really upset, and he wrote literally like 5,000 words why this video game is the worst thing ever.
Hmm.
Just because of all the things in lore that it does incorrectly.
That makes me sick because it feels like they really put a lot of effort into making you feel like you're a part of this world.
Yeah, it worked for me.
Yeah, I mean, and that was, I was even having a long discussion about this game with my brother about how, you know, if you choose to really fall into this lore and you know you can explore it more, but really it's just sort of there as background noise to make you feel like it's a living, breathing universe, something with some depth to it. I don't know, for me it works, for you it sounds like it works.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really funny these people are so caught up in it. I don't know, at a certain point you have to be grateful that you're getting anything and not that it's not like the most perfect exact thing that you want and only you want. So you're just going to take a nap?
Maybe after we're done.
Is that what you're doing? Taking naps?
No.
I'm not checking in with naps.
I'm checking in also with a video game and also with a podcast.
Uh-oh.
Some say synergy. Symbiosis.
You're a do not buy on both of them?
No. I'm a buy. I enjoyed both of them. I'll do the same order you did. I'll do podcast first. First podcast is called the Sylvester Stallone Podcast.
You've already got my attention.
This is a product of the pretty new, Earwolf spinoff called Wolf Pop. I don't know if you're familiar with that at all, Eric.
I'm not. I have a question.
Go ahead.
Is there any pizza scissoring?
No pizza scissoring.
Damn.
At least not yet. I can't speak
not yet.
For later on. But Wolf Pop, they put out like on the, one day they announced like 14 new podcasts. Another one I'd really recommend quickly is Malton on Movies.
Mm-hmm.
That's one I actively listen to. That's just Leonard Maltin and Baron Vaughn, his co-host, talking about movies every week. This podcast, the Sylvester Stallone Podcast, is hosted by Paul Scheer, who also does How This Get Made. He's a comedian. The stated goal, interview Sylvester Stallone about his career. Short episodes, like 5-10 minutes at most.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to tell you anything else about it. You have to listen to it and go on the journey. It releases every day.
You got nothing else, huh?
I cannot tell you anything else about it or I'll ruin it for you. I have to just say, listen to that first episode, go on the journey as it goes.
This is a real dick move, Dorman.
I can't tell you. If I tell you, it will ruin it, literally. It will spoil it. It's 5 minutes. If 5 minute episode, you go listen to that first one, see what, and then you say, if it compels you to listen to the second one, it does. They're very, very short. I've enjoyed it. I can say that. I thoroughly enjoy this podcast. I like your suspicion.
I was figuring I'd get a little bit more meat than that, but that's okay.
I cannot give you any more.
You piece of shit.
I can recommend it though. I love it.
Who'd you say was on it?
It's Paul Scheer.
Okay.
The host of How Did This Get Made?
Yes.
Yeah. And he's a comedian actor. I know all his credits because I've listened to so much How Did This Get Made. I can say exactly everything he's been in. The other thing I want to check in with that I can actually discuss a little bit more in depth than that is a video game called This War of Mine. It came out, was it this week or last week? One or the other. Just, it came out very recently. It is a survival game.
Mm-hmm.
Resource management survival. You are in some undefined country. It's a fictional country. It's made up. And you are a regular, you basically control a group of regular people trying to survive in a war zone.
Hmm.
You start out, it's completely like randomly procedurally generated. There's a certain amount of, characters, like named characters that you can have in your party. Certain one, and you'll randomly start with three of them at the beginning of the game. Each of them have their own unique character traits, goods and bads, pros and cons. You can recruit more throughout the game if you choose to. But you start out in this like bombed out building that you've kind of have taken over. I guess when people have abandoned it, and at night, you'll send one person out to scavenge for supplies at different places, bring back those supplies, try and rebuild this building, defend it, get food. Very important. You have to feed all your people. You have to, they might get sad. They might get tired. They'll get hungry. You have to make beds for them. You have to make sure that the building doesn't get looted. So you have to guard the building at night when, as the same time you're sending out someone to scavenge new things. You're going to encounter people who want to trade with you. You're going to encounter people who want to kill you and take your stuff. It's going to put you in ethical dilemmas about your survival versus doing the right thing. And in it, it's not a, the gameplay isn't similar, but it makes you feel the same way as Papers, Please. Where you are put in this, in a situation where there is no good, there's not a good, like, you know, the right thing to do, but not necessarily to be the best thing to do. Cause you might need some stuff so that you don't die tomorrow. You might need food. And the only way you can get it is by killing someone. And if you kill someone, your character will get sad and or depressed. And will, you know, they could get, eventually, I don't know if they could go to the point of suicide, but I've been led to believe that they can if you don't address it. I actually, and it goes, it's by day, it's a day-night cycle. So you have a day where you're in your house. You, it's a lot of, you get resources, you can build stuff, you get boards, you get like mechanical parts, you get raw food, you can make stoves and metalworking, like eventually you can upgrade all these things so that you can eventually make more advanced things, make cigarettes, make alcohol through a distillery so that you can trade it away. Cause it, you know, obviously in a situation where there's no cigarettes and no alcohol, those things are going to be very valuable in a trading situation. Obviously guns and ammo are also other very valuable, and weapons of any kind. Like it really puts you, it's a very good game, but it also is very, like, I can't play it for too long because it does. I had to play Borderlands after just to go, like, reset myself.
Hmm.
So I wasn't like, oh, this is... But it is, it's a very, you're in a wartime situation. You are not an action hero. You are just some dude.
That's actually really fascinating. And I think that's probably more healthy, just that, you know, we're getting games like that other than, like, oh, I'm big He-Man and I'm going to go shoot a bunch of people in the face.
I've killed 3 people in my current gameplay.
I'm glad you added in my current gameplay.
I've only played 2 games. So I didn't kill anyone in the first time through because after about 5 days, I realized I fucked up a whole bunch. I needed to restart and reuse my resources well because I was going to do, I made poor choices early on. But the second time
through.
Did
you say it's kind of, I don't know, it's like survival horror or the Oregon Trail.
It's kind of like Oregon,
in Iraq. Yeah.
It's not, it's like a, it feels like a European country.
Yeah.
Like an Eastern European country, but you're all English. Like you all have English names.
It's England during the Blitz.
It's modern day, but yeah.
Well, I'm just saying that's what it feels
yeah,
like.
Yeah, it kind of, yeah, it's like you, and every night you'll choose one person to be your scavenger. They have a certain amount of, like the best people have more space. They can carry more. Obviously, so you want to try and use them exclusively as scavenger, and you set them up so they sleep during the day and go out at night. And but there'll be different places that you know of, like, oh, I know there's a hospital, I know that there's a grocery store, I know that there's a suburb area over there, I know that there's this abandoned mechanic shop. Like you can choose where to go, and you have an idea of what's there. To give you an example, I went to a grocery store, and I was told that it was in the military zone, so it's dangerous, you gotta be careful. Cause you can just choose to sneak around. Cause it works sort of like, you know, you see the footsteps, you hear voices, you can try and navigate around people, hide in shadows, et cetera, et cetera. But you walk up to the door of this grocery store and you can hear and you like look through the door, the keyhole, you can see inside and you see that there's a male soldier and he's basically accosting a female scavenger, and I didn't let it play out, but it looked like he's probably going to rape her. But I charged through the door and stabbed him to death before he could shoot me.
Mm-hmm.
And I got his gun out of the equation, and I got access to this great grocery store. But I endangered myself, and I luckily I didn't get hurt. I managed to kill him without him getting off a shot. I imagine if he got off a shot, I would either be severely wounded or die. And I would be down my best scavenger.
Mm.
So that's the question.
That's, right, that's the dilemma that you're constantly put in.
Yes. Should I do the right thing Because I probably could have gotten access to all that stuff if I just let it alone and just wandered, you know, sneaked around without having to worry about putting myself in danger. But that's the question. It makes you face that question.
It's heavy, but man.
It is heavy. But, I mean, especially for a video game. But it's very good. Very, very good.
I can't wait to see the Mario version of it.
Isn't that the new Toad game?
Yeah, Mario stops a rapist.
Before we continue, we both felt we should probably touch on a little bit the situation with Rock Upchurch, the artist, now former artist of Rackmans. Yeah. If for those unaware, news came out this week that he had been arrested for domestic abuse.
Yes.
Apparently it was at Halloween.
It was on Halloween.
On Halloween. There was a situation between him and his estranged wife. They had been separated. They went to, decided to trick or treat with their kids together. Something happened. There was a physical altercation. Both the wife, his wife and Rock Upchurch himself have made statements about it.
Yes.
Neither of them, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say she didn't exactly make a statement, but, well, maybe you have information that I don't, but she just sort of wrote a blog post or something like that. She didn't really have anything else on the page, and she took it down, and a lot of the things that circulated, the information was from a cached version of her blog post.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, of it's course. Not, I don't mean like it's an official anything. It was just her saying whatever. Rock Upchurch came out and said, you know, I'm sorry that it happened.
Yeah.
Gave his reasoning. I did not make any kind of denial. And Curtis Weeb, by the day after or 2 days after, decided to take him off the book as the artist.
Yeah.
So now Rat Queens is going to have a new artist. At some, their next issue was a guest artist anyway, Tess Fowler. So I don't know who the continuing artist is going to be. I don't think I was with you when I talked to Rock at Dragon Con.
I spoke to him on my own briefly.
Yeah, so did I. And, he was, I mean, obviously it's a 5 minute interaction at most.
Yes.
So it's not, you're really not going to get much of a window, but.
No.
It's a very sad situation.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I can. I told our mutual friend Matt this yesterday, and he had not heard it. He was very upset about it, and I think it's
worth being upset about. I mean, it's a bad situation. There's really no part of this I like. I don't like to be particularly victim blamey, but they really did not seem like they had any sort of good relationship based on, you know, the way anyone's acting in this.
No, I don't. Curtis Weeb did come out and say in his state, like when he told, you know, released that, Rock was going to be off the book, that, you know, they had known his wife and their relationship with her was good.
Mm-hmm.
So that I corroborates her a little bit. It seemed like it's just bad. His art was like such an essential part of that book.
Well, beyond that, he was a co-creator of all the characters and, you know, it was not done by just one person, obviously.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what I mean. I mean, like, and it's, I understand why.
I don't know that it sucks. I don't think anyone wants this to happen to, I don't know.
I was going to say, in comics world, I mean, it's a very relatively small community compared to some entertainment. And like with cons, you kind of feel like you're closer to these people.
Mm-hmm.
And with Twitter and all that, like, they're very closely connected to their fans. And when someone you like and enjoy their work, you find out that, you know, they've done something bad, it's disappointing.
Yeah.
And now, and it's not only like that, that relationship is, you know, obviously troubled, but the now like one of the best, most open, like the actual, like the contents of the comic book. Curtis will still be writing it. So, but you know, when you lose half the team, who, you know, it's debatable.
Yeah.
What will happen to the book? We'll see.
I mean, it could mean a lot of bad things for Rat Queens. It could never be as popular as it was getting.
No, it was.
It could completely
like,
fall off.
I was looking at Amazon's top 100 graphic novels.
Yeah.
Comics and graphic novels, you know, best selling and on wish lists and all that. And Rat Queens is on it.
Yeah.
And up there with The Walking Dead and, mm-hmm. and all that. I was just like, well, I hope it continues. I want to see more of it. I hope it's still up to the same quality. And I don't want to dismiss the victim and
no.
Because that's obviously the bigger thing, but it's a terrible situation.
The thing that just really twists me up inside is I really want to like Upchurch, and I really want his, I don't want this to be bad for his career, and
right.
I don't want bad things to happen to him, but at the same time, it's the kind of thing that you can't defend.
No.
You know, it's, I don't know.
You are, I was going to say, a man is responsible for his own violence.
It's true. I mean, I don't know, man.
It's bad.
It's certainly not good.
I'm not sure. There's not a lot to come to get out of this aside from we're sad, but
yeah. Like I don't think
walk away. Don't if there's something toxic, walk away. Don't try and you can't. Sometimes at a certain point, there's no fixing things.
Unfortunately, that's true. I wish Rock had done that. He'd still be on this book.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of throwing his wife downstairs.
Yeah.
Which I believe is what happened.
Yes.
Yeah. I wish we hadn't even talked about this now. It just makes me feel so terrible.
Yeah, it's rough. But I don't know. I think it's important to discuss.
It is.
When, in especially in the context of Hush. Hey, there we go.
There we go.
With that, with our depressing news segment now over, it is time for Nerd Boy Book Club. Nerd Boy Book Club is part show. Eric and I will assign a longer collected work and discuss it in depth like you do in a book club. Hey, Eric already said the name of the title we're reading this week. It is Hush by Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee, originally released in 12 issues. I have it in two trades. I believe you can get it in a longer one big thing right now. You've not read this before, correct, Eric, until this?
No, actually, back when this book was new, a friend of mine from college said, I don't want this anymore, and gave me a copy. And I had trade number one. I had the first couple of issues. And I thought that was all there was for so long. And then I found out that there was more. I thought it was really weird it ended when it ended. But I had no idea why it was such a big deal. When it happened, I kind of understand just based on who worked on it.
Right. Yeah. Jeff Loeb, who had written Long Halloween, Dark Victory with the, amazing Tim Sale doing the art. Mm-hmm. And this time you have him, teamed up with another acclaimed artist.
Yeah.
Even though, Jim Lee.
Yeah.
Telling not of the same kind of story, but as a mystery, a detective kind of thing that he did to a certain extent in both Long Halloween and Dark Victory. I've owned this for a long time, actually.
Hmm.
This is my three fandoms in comics ago, I think.
Hmm.
My first dalliance in comic fandom back when this was just came out in trade, I think. And I liked it a lot more when I read it the first time.
I don't doubt that. I did not really enjoy this too much this time either. Although I feel like the second half is stronger than the first half. But even so, I think the criticisms of Jeff Loeb that you've brought up, that criticism is really coloring my experience of this.
Right. I was going to say, like, I didn't, when I first read it, I was like, wow, this is really fun. And I like, you get, you get to see almost the entirety of Batman's rogues gallery. You get to see him encounter all of them. You see, there's Superman, there's Catwoman, there's all the Robins. You know, it brings in all these characters that you like to see, you know, in one story. And as an average comics reader, you read this. I mean, this is a very public, it's continually selling well. It never does poorly. It's a Batman comic with Jim Lee drawing it and with all of his very popular villains and sidekicks are in it. And then I listen to comic book podcasts. I read reviews about it. Think people talking about it online. After you read that, there's no unseeing it. There's no unhearing it. Mm-hmm. Like, at the end of the day, it's a very convoluted mystery that doesn't make sense.
Mm-mm. Like, why? What the hell's his name? Tommy Elliot. Why
was?
Yeah, he wanted his parents to die when he was a kid.
Yes,
that is literally. I think that's the worst twist I've ever seen in a comic book ever. And I like Jeff Loeb, or at least my impression of Jeff Loeb is I like him. this ending is a disaster.
Yeah, it doesn't, like, the whole book is built around, there's a shadowy figure falling around Batman, watching him, sabotaging him.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the end of the comic, he's basically a henchman of the Riddler. Like, the last villain who Batman encounters in this comic book is the Riddler, not Tommy Elliot. There's a couple of fake reveals. Questions about Tommy Elliot is literally operating on Bruce Wayne's brain at a certain point in this story. Like, he has his head open in front of him, and it's a precarious surgery. You could easily, oops, I killed him.
Well, he doesn't.
This villain.
Okay, so he's doing this stuff to Batman to get back at Bruce Wayne. So he knows. That's clear. Am I missing that?
Well, the Riddler knew, and he told. Isn't that the whole thing? Like, he told. Did he not tell Elliot? I thought Elliot knew too.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's.
Because it just feels. It doesn't matter. This is.
It doesn't matter.
This is, I don't know, it's messy. And it's not a great ending.
No. Okay, if I asked you to define the Riddler's motivations, what would you say they are?
It's posturing?
Like, no, I mean, like, no, not in this book, in general. Like,
oh.
Not in this book, in general.
Hmm.
Like, why does he do things? Why does he fight Batman?
It's like, the Guild of Calamitous intent. It's just a sort of pose, you know, to be a bad guy, to play games with these guys.
Do you think that as the Riddler, he wants to best Batman? He wants to beat
him
and show that he's smarter than him.
That's basically all it is. It's like a big game for him. If you were
with the Riddler, and this is how this comic book ends, is the Riddler and Batman have a conversation where the Riddler reveals that he knows he's Bruce Wayne. And Batman, Bruce Wayne, asks him, what's the Riddler worth where everyone knows the answer? And he says, oh, it's worthless. The Riddler is not about having a riddle that no one can solve. He's about beating Batman.
Mm-hmm.
If he could reveal Batman's identity, it would ruin him. It would, that's a, not necessarily stopping Batman, but certainly is a victory.
Yeah.
I think that's what, like, they had to go, like, to crazy lengths to make, they had to give Riddler amnesia to fix this. to make him not know that Batman is Bruce Wayne. Again, when you're reading through this book, you like issue by issue, like it keeps the pace moving.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels in a way similar to Identity Crisis. I think, like, in that it's fine until you start to look at it. And then you go, wait a second.
Yeah.
This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, you get beyond the surface. It's in a lot more hollow than it seems. And you want to think that Jeff Loeb is not doing that, but yeah.
And you know, and it, what do you think about Jim Lee's art in this, Eric? I know we're sometimes critical of Jim Lee.
I'm still very critical of Jim Lee. Of all these 90s guys, I want to say that Jim Lee is, Jim Lee and team. What is this? Is it Scott?
Scott Williams, the inker.
Oh, is that what it is?
Scott Williams doing inks. Alan Sinclair did the colors.
Okay. Well, that's like his, you know, joined at the hip. That's his twin. And they've worked together forever. Of all these 90s guys, he's the one I respect the most, with the exception of maybe an Eric Larson, just because I have fond memories of Eric Larson. I do not care for his work. I don't like the figures. I think that his art is just sort of pretentious, but the man has technical ability, and I can see how it has appeal for someone. A lot of these 90s guys, like, it's just bad, and it's childish. This is, Jim Lee is, he kind of skirts that line of being more artistic and being, he aspires to be better. And I think a lot of people would say he is, you know, he's a great, great illustrator, but it's still, it's 90s SpaghettiOs artwork to me.
What do you think about those, like, nostalgic, the flashback?
The watercolors?
Yeah.
They're easily my favorite part of the book. It's almost shocking that, that Jim Lee did those. They look, everything is handled very differently.
Yeah.
I enjoy them quite a lot.
Yeah, they're really nice. You get multiple moments of that, usually with its mm-hmm. moments of Bruce Wayne and Tommy Elliot as children interacting with each other in various ways. I think easily my favorite part of this book is them seeing old Green Lantern fight the icicle.
Just looked at it. But it's got a lot of richness to it and a lot of subtlety, and it almost seems like that's the way he should be doing things. I don't like the figures that he's drawing. The hyper masculine Batman and Superman. Batman is like dad in this book. This is Bat Dad.
Yeah, it is.
It's weird, and it makes me a little uncomfortable. Like the part where he's like twisting Catwoman's hand, and he's literally breaking up a fight. It's like, I don't know.
Between her and Robin, yeah.
Yeah.
A staged fight at that.
Mm-hmm.
It's Robin is at doing this because Batman, Bruce Wayne, told him to do this.
Yeah.
To goad her into a fight so that he could track her to see if she's actually trustworthy. Which is kind of a scummy thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I don't know. At a certain...
It's a bit gaslighty.
Yeah, that's...
You know the term gaslighting?
I do know the term gaslighting, yes. I don't know, that I'm supposed to be rooting for this fellow.
Yeah.
I understand that there, like, a lot of this book is highlighting that relationship between
mm-hmm.
Batman and Catwoman. Selina Kyle learns that Bruce Wayne is Batman. He reveals his identity to her, his secret identity. And I do enjoy the Catwoman for the most part in this book.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that she is very, you know, I can take care of myself. You know, she does, you know, I'm taking one of your motorcycles. She's like, and he's about to tell her which one, and she's like, I'm not asking. And I, you know, I like that kind of I mean, that's what I imagine Catwoman. That's my Selina Kyle in my head. That's who she is.
Yeah.
But the fact that Batman is so openly manipulative and he is supposed to be a hero. Like at a certain point, it doubles back on itself. It's like a hero. I know, like, and the thing, another thing that bothered me is when he's fighting Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And this is inner narration. This is Batman's monologue inside his head. And he says, he's fighting Clark Kent, who's been taken over by Poison Ivy, by her love drug or pheromones, whatever you want to call them. And she's controlling him. And of course, Bruce Wayne has the ring, a kryptonite ring that Superman actually gave him previously. He talks about, you know, he has to use subterfuge to beat Superman, obviously, because he's, you know, invincible. And he says something about, at his core, Clark is a good person, mm-hmm. and at my core, I'm not. What?
Why? Well, they go out of their way to prove that in this book, don't they?
I guess they do. It doesn't make sense. He's still a superhero. He's still a good guy, yeah. Right?
I don't know. This is a little bit, this is the Batman that Frank Miller writes. The one that is like, yay, I get to break a guy's ribs tonight because I'm angry at the world.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's, I don't know. It certainly didn't, this aspect of this didn't seem to come through in the writing of either Dark Victory or Long Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could argue about the effectiveness of the mysteries in that book, but the Batman himself in those books didn't seem unlikable. You didn't get you like the Batman in those books, right?
No, absolutely. He feels a lot richer and more interesting than this. This is like a toxic masculinity Batman. It's really strange. It's really peculiar.
Yeah.
Something that bothers me is they never show Clayface. They just use him to explain stuff away. Clayface is a plot device in this. He's never actually in the damn book.
He never says a word except as other.
Yes. And that's fucking stupid. That's really frustrating. They use him in multiple places to explain stuff away and never show him once.
No, they don't.
That is fucking sloppy.
And that whole last scene is all, like, there's as much dialogue in that last scene with the Riddler as there's almost as much of the rest of the book. Because it's Riddler explaining away everything that doesn't make sense in the rest of the book.
You know, I remembered really kind of liking Huntress. Her costume looks it's like the bad. 90s threw up on it.
Yeah, I generally had fond memories of Huntress, but yeah, this her costume, especially in how Jim Lee draws it in this, is not good.
She's like
those ears, on her cowl, like 3 foot high.
It's a bit rough.
Yeah,
it's almost like someone was trying to design a cool costume and then forgot how to do it. It's bad. It's the worst. This came out in the early 2000s and it looks so 90s.
Yeah. Well, I don't.
Jim Lee's only going to change so much, I guess.
Yes, but to be fair, he's not working on necessarily all his designs, but certainly his ideas about things. I don't know. Hush as a character just seems. I don't know. Like, as a villain, he has a bandaged face.
Mm-hmm.
He has two pistols and is wearing a trench coat. How more generic? It just seems like very much like, what do people like in a villain? What could we put in a villain in? And the fact that they use a Two-Face fake out once in this book, who has a Two-Face, what is Harvey Dent?
There's a lot of fake outs in this.
There's
a lot of cheap red herrings.
Yes, there are. Oh, you think it's the Joker? Oh, it's not the Joker. Not the Joker because I shot him.
Yeah. I mean, there's a friend of mine pointed it out to me after he read the first book. The same friend that gave the book to me. He's like, look at this guy. And he shows me Tommy Elliot. He's wearing the same coat as this guy. It's probably him. And it turns out he's right. Because I don't know. But he specifically put that coat on like four different people in this book.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of trench coats walking around.
Yeah. Although I do love that, that Killer Croc has a trench coat and jean shorts. Trench coat and jorts. That's,
that's a good combo.
Yeah.
No one has ever accused the Killer Croc as being a fashionista. Although I do really like the idea of like Killer Croc dressed up like really nice. I don't know why someone hasn't done that yet.
Killer Croc in a tuxedo. I like that idea.
Yeah, like instead
white
of
tie,
make,
Killer Croc.
He's always so savage. Make him like civil. Do make it like civilize him a little bit and have him be a you know dressed up. Maybe he goes through a change and decides he wants to be more human. Unless crocodile.
There are a lot of bad Batman stories.
Yeah. There are.
I'm starting to think, like, why do people like Batman? I'm starting to feel like my only positive attachment to Batman is the animated series.
I was about to say, like, I already know what you're going to say when you say that.
Of course. I mean, the other thing that I would point out is the Christopher Nolan movies, but I've still not seen the third one. Still, it's like a point of pride at this point.
I don't think I'm as down on Jim Lee as you are, but
he's just really not my thing. I recognize ability when I see it. He is not untalented. He is very popular for a reason. There's something about his style that really captures the imagination of people that buy comics. I do not enjoy it. I do not enjoy his work. It is somewhat palatable. It looks too 90s, and it subscribes to something that I just can't see eye to eye with. It's hard for me to articulate.
I do want to tell you that later on, this is even the worst comic book involving Hush.
Oh, yeah.
There is literally a comic book where Hush kidnaps Catwoman's heart.
You have to give me a minute. I think my brain just exploded. What?
She's kept alive somehow. I don't think that works like that, but comics. He takes out her heart and kidnaps her heart. So it could be worse.
I don't think that could be worse. I think given the context, that could be like a really... to be serious about that, that's bad.
It's like All-Star Batman and Robin.
Like that story would work in an Adventure Time comic.
Yeah.
That's the only context I can imagine that being a functional story plot point.
Make it silly.
Yeah.
Again, this is... A lot of these are just ideas that have been rehashed from other places.
Mm-hmm.
Especially hitting the head of the hammer with Batman's guilt about the death of Robin, of not killing the Joker when he's had the chance a million times.
You see, let me tell you something that I had only read the first book of this for many years until now. I had not read the second part. My understanding was that Hush turned out to be Jason Todd, which is what happened in the cartoon that's on Netflix. That would have been a much, much better ending.
If they had just, gone with that instead of...
Yeah, that would have made a lot more sense. Everything would have fit together. I'd be a lot more positive about this. To turn it around in the last minute and say it's this guy, even though he was certainly introduced way earlier in the story, it doesn't fucking make sense. Anyway, it sounded like you were going to say something, but I wanted to put that on the table.
No, that's... He was... The idea for him coming back was... in. This is the first time we've seen the... like a tease. And then later on... within a couple years, he actually was brought back in as the Red Hood.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, this...
That cartoon just took those two events and rolled them together and made a better story. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Which is what a lot of the DC animated movies do, frankly.
I guess that's true.
Like, their Superman Doomed movie?
Yeah.
Much better than the comics.
Yeah.
Because it's more concise.
It doesn't have the death of Superman as bad as... Or the return, the Supermen, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, they make it very, they combine it all down and make it shorter, easier, better, which is generally a good thing.
Yeah. Well, I think that the DC Comics animation has a very good track record.
They do.
I think they should stop making comics at this point and just make cartoons.
This took a year. This is a mystery that took a year to tell that wasn't very good. Although it has a great reputation. A lot of people like it a lot.
A lot of people like...
SpaghettiOs?
Well, yeah. But I was going to say Green Lantern. But I can't think of what the hell it's called. I'm so dumb right now. This book has made me so stupid.
I can't think of it either. You're fine. Sinestro Corps War.
Sinestro Corps is what I'm talking about. Dumb Punching, the book.
Dumb Punching. I think this is worse in a certain way.
It's certainly more concise.
That's true. But, like, this is trying to be some kind of mystery when it's a farce.
Yeah.
It's not a mystery. It's just like, ha ha ha, all those things you thought, they're all wrong, because the thing that actually happens, you didn't see coming, because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, exactly. That's no way to tell a mystery.
No, the best mysteries, honestly, ones you are just, they make sense in the end.
So here's another thing that doesn't make sense. The only reason Two-Face is insane is because he needed some surgery.
Yes. That's what the comic book says. Plastic surgery fixes everything, didn't you know?
Well, there we go.
And get it? Tommy Elliott is a surgeon, and there's symbiosis? One more time? Sure. Not this time?
No, I'm not having it.
Do you think that if I hadn't picked at the mystery stuff of the previous ones we've read of his, do you think you'd have enjoyed this more?
Maybe more, but at the end of the day, this is the worst thing I've ever read by Loeb. This is a writer that I have enjoyed thoroughly. I've not read extensively, but I've like read Daredevil. I've thumbed through his Hulk Gray.
Yeah, that's really good. I have read that. That was very good.
I mean, he's done a lot of very good stuff. You know, I've read almost all of his old Batman stuff with Tim Sale. And maybe that's what it takes. You know, maybe he needs that counterpoint to criticize him. To say, this doesn't work, this doesn't work, you should do this. And, you know, that's sort of the problem with exalting creators as geniuses or whatever. Is they get so full of themselves, they're beyond criticism, they just do things that are self-indulgent. You know, they put radios in the FBI agent's hands, and they put midichlorians in Jedi.
Yeah. Do you think that at a certain point, a Batman comic, all it has to do is throw a bunch of those colorful villains at the wall and it will be popular?
It really is starting to seem like that, because it's very clear that's what's happening in all of these Loeb stories. And the other ones, it's hard for me to say because it was invisible to me then, you know. but it just felt like a really big story, and all these parties were involved, and it was a cast that was peopled with all these interesting characters. And this, it just feels like we'll just keep putting people in it. Keep going. Throw more shit in there. It really fails. I think if I hadn't read this, I would have probably thought that was a kind of unwarranted criticism. This is where it breaks down for me. This is where it feels more like a weakness and less like just, you know, something in his bag of tricks. Because it absolutely doesn't work here. I don't know how you go for a year of writing this and it feels so half-formed. You're going to say.
I don't know. It's a mystery.
Yeah. That's the true mystery. It's a fucking meta mystery. Well done, Loeb. You're so smart. You just fucking inceptioned us.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say, Eric?
No.
Yeah, I think we've made it pretty clear how we feel about this comic.
Yeah, we've said a lot.
Yeah, we've talked a bit. So, folks, we are taking next week off for Thanksgiving. Eric's going to be in a secluded area.
Yeah, I'm going to be in the woods fighting bears. It's not going to be pretty. And by bears, I mean, you know, gay men that wear leather and live in the woods. It's very common.
Is it?
I think.
Okay. But the week after... The week after that, so that's 2 weeks from the time we release this, we will be having an episode, and we are going to be reading for Nerdboy Book Club Uncanny X-Force by Rick Remender. It is issues 1 through 35, the entire run. We have 2 weeks, so we're going to, you know, have a little bit sizable chunk. I've been aching to reread and discuss this because of what's happening in Axis.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that will come up. But yeah, Uncanny X-Force. All of it. Go find it. Go read it. It's great.
Read along.
Read along. This will be the end of the episode. We are the Ants Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at antsboyscomicshour.com. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, most podcatchers of your choice will be there. If you like the show, please review, rate, subscribe, any of those places. It really helps us out, gets more eyes on the product as, you know, that's my marketing speak.
Mm-hmm.
The brand.
Yes.
Whatever. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/HandsomeBoysComicsHour. We're on Twitter at HBCHour. You can email us at HandsomeBoysComics@gmail.com. Yeah. You can find me online on Twitter at MixMasterCereal. It's MixMasterCereal. Eric, where can they find you online?
Well, you can point your browser to freewillunlimited.com and look at my portfolio. You can also go to ericzgoodnight.com to keep up with most of the new stuff I do online, including my Pinterest and Tumblr. My Twitter is also there. You can tweet directly at me by going to Mr. Bad Example, spelled MR Bad Example.
So with that, folks, we will call it a day. Happy Thanksgiving!
Gobble, gobble. I mean, rock and roll.